Voices on the Podium on the BBC World Service,
where each week we'll be revealing the secrets behind sporting greats, hearing how dreams of winning Olympic or Paralympic gold became a reality, and where they went from there. I'm Eliza Skinner. I'm a stand-up comedian, and if you're wondering what I know about the Olympics and the Paralympics and training to be a athletic success, it's absolutely nothing. But I'm here to find out, and hopefully you will be interested in what I find out also. And hey, maybe some of that success is going to rub off on me. Here I come, Olympics. With me is Paralympian and world record holder Scout Bassett. Hey, Scout, where do you keep all your medals?
Hey, Liza. It's great to be joining you. Let's see. I recently moved, so I think they're in my closet, but I actually don't know. So probably not the best answer to give to you.
You don't know where your medals are? What if there was a heist?
Well, there might be, and you know what? It probably wouldn't be that hard for them to find them. I know people are like, oh, you must put them in somewhere super secure. No, sadly not, but maybe I should revisit that.
Yeah, you don't have them proudly displayed for any time someone comes over to fix your sink or whatever? Like, oh, these old things?
Oh, gosh, no. I don't have like any of my anything up for display because I don't want people to like come to my house and be like, oh, she really thinks a lot of herself, you know?
I mean, it is your house. You can remind yourself of that stuff, but I would think you wouldn't want people coming over and being like, oh, do you want a race? She's got to be up for a race. You want to, should we arm wrestle? How can we compete?
Well, we get that a lot too, right?
Right. Yeah. Jump over this table.
How fast can you run a mile? That's usually the common one.
Yeah. Now, for every top athlete like Scout, there's thousands more who will compete and not podium. And behind them, millions of lesser mortals like you and me. And the BBC's athletics commentator, Ed Harry. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Eliza. How are you doing?
How does it feel being known as... just as non-athletic as me?
I'm happy to hang on the coattails, really. I like to go to these places. I like to be in the stands. I like to commentate. I like to talk to the athletes. I haven't got any medals. I've got all the badges that you have to have. Not the badges you buy as a souvenir. Yeah.
The press passes.
Exactly. My accreditations. They're in a bag somewhere. And every so often I get out that bag and go, oh, he had more hair then. Or, you know, I remember that. But they're not out on display. But they're treasured. And I think they're in a sideboard somewhere in this house.
Yes, I have a lot of those from comedy festivals and Comic-Cons. And it is a record of all the different terrible hairstyles and colors that I have tried. Mm-hmm. So now you've been to a lot of Olympic and Paralympic games, right?
I didn't know I wanted to be a journalist when I was 12, because that's my age in 88. I think I wanted to be a park ranger. That didn't come into anything, but I found journalism, and I eventually found my way into the BBC, and I went to the Games for the first time in Athens in 2004. My main memory of my first Olympic Games attending, though, is basically melting every morning because there was no roof on the pool. It was outdoors, and it was so hot in this Athenian sun, this big floppy sun hat, loads and loads of sunblock, and every day I just kind of just consumed water, but just incredible. And I've been lucky enough to go to every Games since, Olympics and Paralympics, as track and field commentator, Beijing, London, and most recently, for now, Rio.
See, people think about how physically difficult it is for the athletes, but they don't think about how hard it is for the commentators out in that sun, the real heroes.
That's what I like to think.
Yeah, that's an Olympic sunburn you're getting. So enjoy it. What about you, Scout? What was your first memory of going to the Olympics, or the Paralympics, rather?
My first games of competing was 2016 in Rio. But my first memory of actually watching the Olympics was the 2008 Beijing Games. And obviously that had just a little bit of significance considering it was took place in my homeland. And that was the first time I ever saw the Olympics and really didn't know what it was. But I just remember being glued to my television morning and night and thinking it was just the coolest thing. And at that time I didn't know, it sounds crazy to people, but I didn't really know about the Paralympics at all. And certainly didn't know how to get involved or how to participate. So those dreams were not there yet, but I do remember thinking it was really cool and you know, never imagined I would ever myself be competing at the games.
Time we got on with the show and introduced our guest. Ed, who's on the podium?
He is an archery silver medalist from the London 2012 Paralympic Games for Team USA, a world championship and Para Pan Am Games medalist as well. He represented the US for a second time at a Paralympics in Rio in 2016. Our guest was born without arms, and when I met him at London 2012, we were appearing on the same program one evening. I instinctively, as I do with a lot of people, went to shake his hand, and at that moment, I just wanted the ground to swallow me up. And he was brilliant. He was brilliant with me. He was just lovely about it. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome Matt Stutzman. Welcome, Matt. You are on the podium.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I actually remember that exchange with you.
I think I kind of shook a shoulder. You kind of went like this. You're sort of, and I went, okay, we're going to do that.
I've learned that it's better for me to extend my shoulder and say, this is how I shake hands, just like right out of the gate. That way there's no confusion or nothing like that.
Yeah, that can't have been the first time it happened.
No. Sometimes I'll mess with people and I'll like extend a foot or something like that. But
figure it out.
Yeah.
Now, we've asked our guests to delve deep into the photo albums, or I guess a good search of their Instagram accounts, to provide us with some iconic images from their life and career. So, Ed, reveal the first photo.
Okay. So each of our guests on podium, we've given them some guidelines, a bit of guidance. And this first photo is greatest sporting achievement to date. And the image which Matt has gone for, well, it is that podium moment from London 2012. Well, probably more true to say it's immediately after the gold medals have been hung around the athletes' necks. All three men are wearing them. Should say that gold and bronze are both wheelchair users. Matt is standing up. It's a beautiful sunny day. London 2012 is on the wall behind them on the livery. And you're both holding up the hands of the gold medalist in the middle. And that means in your case, Matt, he's holding your sleeve aloft. But it just looks like a wonderful moment in time on a beautiful day, which must have meant so much to you.
Yeah, that was kind of the moment for me where I realized that all my dreams essentially were kind of happening in a way I didn't expect them to happen, but that kind of just brought back a lot of emotion for me to be there. I could see my parents in the stands. It's kind of funny because the guy who won the gold medal, I told him that I was never gonna let him beat me again, and he didn't understand what I was saying, so he agreed with me. So we like to joke around about it and stuff, but that specific moment I did not think I was gonna be there, because I had just started shooting maybe a year or so before the game started.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I started archery in October of 2010, but then I didn't learn about the games until 2011.
Wow, that's fast.
Wow.
Yeah, so like I said, I didn't expect to be there. I was training for Rio, and I made the team to go to London and then found myself on the podium, which was pretty awesome too.
So wait, how did you find archery to begin with then? If this wasn't like a lifelong archery journey.
For me, it started when I was sitting at home on a couch and I couldn't figure out how to provide for my kids. The economy was really bad at that time. Nobody was, you know, giving me a job or an opportunity to do it. And I remember seeing a guy on TV with a bow and arrow, and something said I needed to try it. As soon as I tried it, though, I fell in love with it immediately. And I found my Michael Jordan moment, I guess I should say.
Wow. So it wasn't Hunger Games at all.
I mean, we were hungry.
Okay, fair. Higher stakes in a way.
Yeah.
Matt, I'm curious if before that moment, had you ever tried any other adaptive sports before then?
So growing up, I played lots of sports. I played semi-pro football. I played basketball and all sorts of stuff.
So that's mostly a lot of group sports.
And then archery, I'm guessing, is a very solo sport. Does that feel different, making that kind of transition to, like, it's just you?
Not really, because I'm kind of used to just doing things on my own because of how I have to think just to get through life, I guess. In fact, I feel like that's one of the reasons why I was able to excel so fast. I could go and learn at my own pace. There was nothing holding me back, and I could just run with it.
As a comedian, I understand this from having moved from improv and sketch comedy to stand up when you'd have to coordinate way fewer schedules. I get it.
So question, if you sit down, is it no longer stand up?
I see who's got the jokes today.
I love comedy. If I could do comedy for a living, I would.
You wouldn't love it anymore.
I probably wouldn't love it anymore. I love making people laugh. Yeah. You know how funny it is when you wear long sleeve shirts and then you purposely like shut them in a door or something like that, and people are like,
I feel like we have a comedian, another one right here, you know, a future star is born.
Yeah, so you've got a perfect setup for unbelievable physical comedy bits.
Yeah, I could go on and on. Having no arms has gotten me out of even speeding tickets, so. Wow. Yeah.
I have to say, Matt, I've also used that. I call it my handyman card for the very same reason. We probably shouldn't have revealed that, but
it's a lead foot, literally.
Really, it is. It is, and the way I look at it, you know, we've had to pay a very high price for the losses that we've experienced, and if this is something that just gives us a little bit of an advantage, mm-hmm. one benefit, I'm willing to take
it. Sure.
And a few practical jokes.
Matt, what did everybody else make of you? In the photograph that you gave us, the gold medalist and the bronze medalist are wheelchair users, and there you are, and what they're doing, pulling a bow back with their arms, is very different to what you're doing. I mean, was there even a moment where the Paralympic movement had to go, can Matt Stutzman be in this category? I can't imagine there are many people like you that have walked across their threshold into Paralympic sport.
Yeah, when I told people that I was going to shoot archery, they're like, you have no arms. It's impossible to shoot a bow without arms. And then it turned into, wow, look at that guy shoot a bow with no arms. And then it was like, oh, great, Matt's here. Do we really have to? For the most part, though, I think it was a good thing for our sport, because not only does it show that anybody can do it and do it at a high level, and it doesn't matter what your disability is. There are actually now two other armless archers besides me that are competing international. So that's showing that we're moving the sport forward.
So can you describe how you do this? How do you shoot an arrow with a bow and having no arms?
So I have to sit in a chair. And I will tell you this, that the bow is not modified for me whatsoever. So like the bow is a completely, it's the same exact bow the other athletes are, I mean, they might be using a different brand, but the bow is designed to be shot with their hands. I just learned how to shoot it. But I sit down in a chair and I put the bow kind of between my legs and I lay my arrows on the right side of the bow. I then use my right foot to grab an arrow and load the bow. At this point, I will take my right foot, pick up the bow, and kind of sit gentleman style where I cross my legs a little bit, where my right ankle is on my left knee. At this point, I bend down to the string and I will hook a release aid onto the string. I sit up. At this point, I am holding the bow with my right foot and the string is on my right shoulder, and I push the bow away from my chest, which draws the bow back. At that point, I begin the aiming process, and when I'm ready to fire, the release aid has a little trigger on it that I activate with my chin, shooting the arrow and hitting bullseyes. I have found that shooting a bow with no arms
starts conversations.
Yes. The second somebody watches me, they all want to talk to me about stuff. To them, it's almost like watching The Impossible. I know that sounds weird or whatever, but watching a person with no arm shoot a bow, you're like, people can't wrap their heads around how this is working.
This is On the Podium with me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry. And today our guest is the armless archer, Matt Stutzman. Let's move on to the next photo.
So we've had the greatest sporting moment to date in Matt's career. This second challenge is a much deeper dive into our guest's personal archive. And I think you're going to enjoy this picture.
Oh, what a cutie.
Love it. Look at all that hair.
Right, look at that hair. Yeah.
Where did it go?
Well, that's it, isn't it? We've got to say, we've got to describe this.
Okay, yes. So we've got a little tiny Matt in a booth at a restaurant. How old are you there?
I had to be over a year old because I didn't get adopted until I was 13 months old. So I'm guessing maybe 2 years old there probably. What's interesting about this picture is people ask me how I taught myself how to like eat and stuff. And I don't remember because obviously at 2 years old, I was already holding a fork in my foot. So apparently my brain just knew how I was going to have to do that stuff before I actually realized that I had no arms.
It's a big family, isn't it? It was 7 siblings. Did that just mean you just had to muck in and get on with stuff and nobody made any kind of extra fuss of you because there was a whole gang of you to start with?
I think it was a benefit because of the amount of kids and people we had in the family. Everybody had to pitch in. Everybody had to work. And for as much as I tried to use the excuse, I have no arms, I can't do it, they still found ways, so I had to do chores. Like, they didn't fall for any of my little tricks or whatever to get out of stuff. So I think it was a good thing to have a family like that, because there are times where, like, even with my kids, like when I had one child, you could focus on that child and a lot easier than when you have 3 or 4 in the house. And so because we had so many, there were times where I just had to learn to think outside the box and do stuff on my own, which was a blessing because now that I'm older, I don't need anybody's help to live. Like I don't need modifications. I don't need, you know, anything.
Yeah, it does seem like what I'm getting from you is that like you have this mindset that's like, I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to get great at this, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Does that feel right?
So before I came to get on this call, I was in my garage replacing a motor in a car. So I would have to say that mindset is probably 90% of who I am. I can mentally figure out pretty much anything or how to do stuff. When it comes to archery, for me, there was like it had to be done. This was how I was going to provide. But then, of course, I fell in love with the sport, you know, and that's kind of how my whole life has been with everything, really.
Does that ever knock you off track? Like, I'm going to figure something out just to figure it out, not because like I really need to. Like that happened to me where I'm like, I'm going to beat this challenge, even if it doesn't matter.
Yeah. You know, so when I was younger, I wanted to be the best basketball player in the world. And I spent years practicing, and I got pretty good at it with a guy without arms. Like I can make 3-pointers and free throws, and like I was pretty good. The reality was that I was never going to be an NBA basketball player, but I needed to do it just to prove that I could.
Matt, I'm curious. The first time you shot an arrow, you know, I can remember the first time I put on a prosthetic to run for the first time in my life, and that feeling and the anxiety that I had leading up to that. What was that moment like for you, and what kind of emotions or feelings did you get from being able to do that for the first time?
I didn't know how I was going to do it. I Googled how to teach an armless man how to shoot a bow.
And there were tons of chat rooms, just lots and lots of people who'd done it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. How many results did you find on Google for that?
0.
Okay.
I literally was just on my own. self-taught. It's one of those things where it's like a puzzle. So I remember asking the archery shop, I said I wanted to buy a bow. And he said, you mean like a crossbow? And I said, no, like a regular bow. And he's like, well, how are you going to shoot it? And I said, I don't know. Just let me buy it and then leave the room. Because that's where I do my best thinking, is just give it to me and let me see it, touch it, feel it, and figure it out on my own and how I was going to do that. And it didn't take me but maybe a week or so. One of the things that did help me was visualization. I saw a guy on TV or whatever shooting his bow, so I would pretend I was him. I know that sounds weird, but if he held the bow in his right arm, then I was like, well, then I have to hold the bow with my right foot. He drew the bow back with his left arm or whatever, then I got to draw the bow back with my shoulder. And I was able to pretend I was him to mimic his movements as best as I knew how. And by doing that, I was able to teach myself how to shoot. And I shot that first arrow and I hit the target. This sounds really weird. I started laughing, like kind of like just giggle laugh. And I was like, oh boy, what just happened? This is going to be insane. It's a feeling I've never had since then, really, either, because it's like you searching your whole life and all of a sudden that light bulb comes on.
Yeah,
bam, here it is.
You said earlier that so often it seems to other people that you're doing something impossible. It sounds like at that moment, it seemed to you were doing something impossible.
Yeah, it never felt impossible to me in my mind. Like looking back, I never was like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to do this. The only people that thought it was impossible were the people I told I was going to do it. It's like, I'm going to do this. And they're all like, you can't do that. That's impossible. And I think maybe that's some of the reason why it drove me, because the quickest way to get me to do something is to tell me I can't do it.
Matt, to go from 2010, picking up a bow for the first time, London 2012, winning a Paralympic silver medal. And I mentioned you're a world championship medalist. And I think as part of Team USA, you set a world record score at one of those world championships. You've done incredible things. But when we were sitting down, coming up with the idea for this program, we wanted to know as well, when it doesn't work out so well, and what do you do then? And I know there wasn't a medal for you at the Rio Paralympic Games in 2016. So that's getting on for 5 years ago. What happened? And do you still carry what happened with you to this day?
That was definitely a low moment for me. That took me a little bit to reevaluate everything, because the 2012 games, I was happy to be there. The 2016 games, I spent 4 years training for a specific moment, right? So you invested all this time and energy into it. And I lost because of an equipment malfunction. And I was shooting better than I had shot in London. And I knew I could podium there. You know, obviously wore on me for a while, but it taught me to have a short memory when it comes to archery, because something that is out of your control that you can't do anything about it. So you have to learn how to forget about it. So for as much as I haven't forgot about it, I was able to brush it off over a little bit of time when I learned that, you know, that's just a learning point for me. And then the very next year, I went on to actually win the able-bodied national championship in the United States.
That's amazing.
In fact, I beat all able-bodied archers for Team USA and everybody, and made the able-bodied archery team for USA that year as well. So I learned something very valuable from that. And I was able to come back stronger than I was before.
And this broken arrow, because that's what it was, an arrow with a crack in it in Rio. Where is that arrow now?
This sounds really weird. Don't judge me, but I have a safe in the corner and it has, you know, a whole bunch of medals on it, probably 40 some medals and my Paralympic medal, but the arrow's in the safe.
Wow. So you forgive, but you don't forget, is what you're saying?
Yeah. It's a very good reminder of just what happened to me. But in a positive way, like I, that arrow is special because I was able to learn so much from it. And I didn't really learn that much from my medals, because you know, when you're doing well, you think you have it figured out. It's when things go wrong is when you learn your lessons to make you better.
Oh, we can go on to our next photo. Ed, what do we got?
So this is something that demonstrates a passion in Matt's life away from what he's known for, away from being an archer. And this is Matt behind the wheel of a car, one foot on the steering wheel. You're wearing that one of those tops that's kind of got sponsor logos on it. It almost looks like you're going to go and do some off-roading. And basically, you're looking at the camera, but you're not smiling, but you've got that twinkle. You look to me as though you're saying, I'm about to do something really, really cool. And this is just how I roll. Like, it's to me, it's like you're about to do something for Top Gear, the TV show. That's what I get when I look at this photo.
Yeah, very intense, very fast and furious.
Yeah, so I love cars. They are a little secret passion of mine that it's not a secret. When I'm home and we have races, I actually will race my car as well. Anything to go fast. So it could have totally been a Top Gear, like, let's go do some burnouts or something. But cars and archery are very similar, as in a car just wants to be driven and it doesn't care how it wants to be drove. A bow wants to be shot. It doesn't care how it's shot. So you could be a very good archer and a very good car fixer or mechanic or race car driver, because it doesn't care, right? It's just a machine or whatever. And so that's why I love both of those sports. Last year there was 150 cars in my division and I finished third overall. The car just wants to go fast, and I'm the guy that is okay with holding it to the floor and seeing what happens.
Do you get a similar kind of reaction, you know, when people see you with a bow and arrow as when people see you with a car? They like, wait a minute, how's he going to do this?
Yeah, so my car is not modified for me whatsoever. I use my right foot on the steering wheel. My left foot runs the gas and the brake. And when you get out of your car, people look at you funny. They're like, how did that? Like, I get all the time, is your car modified? And I'm like, yeah, check it out. And they'll walk over to the truck and open it up. And they're like, well, I don't even see anything wrong. I'm like, yeah, because it's actually not modified. I just drive with my feet. And they're like, what? And then.
So, Matt, I'm not able to drive a stick because I'm, you know, above the knee amputee on one side. But can you only drive automatics, or can you also drive sticks?
No. My first vehicle was a Nissan 300. ZX, that was a 5-speed manual.
Wow.
Yeah.
What? I can't even drive.
Gosh, okay. That's amazing. Yeah. That's impressive.
What you guys also don't know is I can ride motorcycle.
What?
No. Yeah, I need Iowa, to see a video of that.
Yeah. Oh. I'll have to send you one. In fact, when I was 14, I think, a guy gave me a motorcycle and said it was in a fire. And he said, if you can fix it, you can have it. And that summer I rebuilt it and I taught myself how to drive a motorcycle and got a free motorcycle out of it.
Wow. Okay. I have one other follow up. You know, when you're shooting a bow or whether you're driving as an athlete, I can see you have to have incredible lower body flexibility to be able to get your legs up that high and in those positions, your hamstring, your glutes. Like, do you do yoga or do you stretch or are you just naturally that flexible because you've always had to be?
Yeah, I don't do any yoga. Okay. But if you look in the picture of the car, I mean, that's my foot up by my head.
Yeah.
Shooting a bow, it's up by my head. When I eat, my foot's up by my face. Everything that I do is natural, just keeps me flexible because every day I'm flexing like that.
Well, that makes sense.
I find my own reaction so weird here because, like, I never wanted to be an archer. So you're an amazing archer. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay. I never wanted to fix cars or race cars. You can do that. I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay.
I know.
But you can drive stick. And I'm like, what? He's a magician. Like, you also you've got three kids that you're raising. What are other modifications that you have had to make that you think would surprise people?
So this is good. If you were to walk into my house right now, besides a picture on the wall, you would not know that a guy without arms lives here. There's zero modifications in my house.
Wow. And your kids, I'm assuming, don't think of you as having any kind of difference from other dads?
No, they actually think it's kind of cool for some reason, because they try to use their feet all the time and try to up one me. So they're always wanting to like eat with their feet or
That must be impressive when they go to their friends' houses.
this is what's weird. I'm like, dude, you guys have arms. You can use your hands. Like you're gonna make a mess all over the floor. That's a bowl of cereal with milk in it. You're gonna kick it all over the floor, and then they'll just be like, "Well, you do it." I'm like, well, "Okay, might as well let them try."
So, do we have time for one more photo?
I hope so, because this is the wild card. So we've gone looking for this ourselves. This is what happens when you open up your Instagram and social media to us. Okay, Matt, in this photograph, you're on a weights bench, you're lying down, your feet towards the camera, and Wonder Woman is standing over you, indicating the bar. Now, I suppose I should really say somebody dressed as Wonder Woman, unless she is Wonder Woman. But what was it, superhero day at the gym? What is happening in this picture?
Well, that was arm day. So that actually is my personal trainer. So in 2016 at the games, I didn't focus on health. I was just focusing on trying to be a really good archer. And for archery, you don't really have to be that much in shape. So at that games, I was like 218 pounds. Because all they did was sit and shoot all day, and I never exercised or nothing. And then I had a guy tell me, if you want to get 1% better, you should also be, an athlete. And so right after that games were over, I started losing weight. So I'm down to like 163 and like 12% body fat now, which is, so I work out all the time. Anyway, that's my personal trainer. And I was trying to think of a funny video that we could make. And for some reason she showed up in that costume for workout day. I'm like, you're going to work out? And she's like, yeah, I'm Wonder Woman today. I'm like, well, then Wonder Woman needs to help me with arm day. And so then that was the picture.
Okay. So I have to ask, did you get any new superpowers after you worked out with Wonder Woman? Because, you know, that is the effect that she has.
Believe it or not, I can shoot my bow for longer periods of time without being fatigued. I have found that my scores have gone up. So, like, I'm starting to see where all this work has paid off. So, yeah, in a roundabout way, I was given a superpower, the 1% I was looking for.
So what's next? What are you conquering next?
I have so many things that are kind of on my list of things to do as far as make my third games and kind of get that shot of, you know, redemption, I guess.
Well, we wish you all of the luck, and I don't think you need it, but you can have it.
I will take all the luck. I'm all about luck. Bring on the luck.
Okay. Well, good luck then. Let me be specific about it. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you as our very first guest. Thank you so much. And as we said, we're pulling for you.
I appreciate that a lot, guys. Thank you very much for having me. And hopefully I see you at a games at some point. I would definitely shake your hand.
I'm getting the feeling that this is going to all make me feel very lazy. like, oh man, I made breakfast and got tired. This guy could do everything.
He was so impressive. I mean, all the things he's able to do, and obviously an incredible athlete. I learned so many new things about him that I didn't know before. I mean, driving a motorcycle, I feel like I have not seen that, and I need to kind of check that out because I'm really curious how he's able to do that.
You were talking about the ways that he rides motorcycles and his physical process for archery. Do people ask you those questions a lot, Scout? Like, is there a lot of curiosity about your physical process?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is probably only something that an adaptive person could ask to another adaptive person. But one of the most common questions I get is, you'll be at a store, or whether it's the supermarket or a convenience store, and I know what they're trying to ask is, what happened to you that you have a prosthetic. But wow. It usually comes down to what happened to you. It's just that, right? In fact, the other day when I was
at
a store...
That's such a dark question.
Right?
To have be your like first thought about a person? This seems traumatic. I wonder what it was.
Exactly. I'm in line at the airport to get a rental car. And, you know, this woman actually had cut me in line. Didn't see me, but maybe that's because of my height. I'm quite short and petite. So maybe she just didn't see me. I gave her grace for that. But then when she turned around after 10 minutes, she said, "What happened to you?" And it was just like that. And I bet you Matt gets that same question all the time, right? Just very bluntly, like, what happened to you? And I know the curiosity and the question is not meant to be so blunt, right? But that comes all the time. And my answer depends really on how much time I have, right? Because to tell my whole story, I'm like, okay. You know, and also even maybe how I'm feeling because, and I always tell people this, that it's okay to ask questions, but also don't be offended if the person A may not be ready to answer it, or maybe they have just acquired their injury or their loss, right? Mm. And they might not be in a mental state where they are ready to talk about it. So if they don't respond in the way that you want, to not take that personally or to be offended. But also, you know, sometimes, especially with kids, it's hard because my accident was very traumatic and it's hard for kids to conceptualize, you know, being in a fire and losing your leg. And so sometimes I feel like a little funny about going into the details. So, you know, it can be as basic as, I was in an accident, but then, and sometimes they'll just leave it at that. And then you always get that, well, what kind of accident? And then, you know, and, but some days, you know, if I want to be funny, I can be like, oh, I shouldn't probably say this because I live in Southern California, but, oh, I was in a shark attack. And they'll be like, what? You know, and so sometimes it's funny. Yeah. I guess the only bad thing is if they look me up, they're going to be like, that's not what she told us.
She doesn't say anything about a shark.
So, you know, I think it's good. And Matt is a great example of this. He has humor about what he looks like and his experiences. And he's able to take something, you know, most people would see as very difficult and make it funny. And he has a great sense of humor about it. And to be able to laugh and poke fun of yourself in our position, I think is really important in life and for us. And it just shows you that how comfortable in many ways he is with what he looks like. And he's really embraced it and all the things he's able to do. And I thought that was a great quality about him.
And I think some things in sport can almost be like art as well. You know, the way somebody throws a football or the way somebody sprints in full flight. And there is a real grace to what he does when he shoots that bow and arrow with his feet. And he was explaining, wasn't he, how he basically just transcribed hands for feet and away he went. But what he's created, which other people are now copying or adapting to their impairment and following in his footsteps, it's just, it is beautiful and it is graceful. And it's just something that he's given, a bit like Dick Fosbury high jumping at the 1968 Olympics with the Fosbury flop. Every so often somebody comes along and they just do something which totally captures your eye and just changes everything. And yeah.
That's really interesting. I never thought of sport that way. And it reminds me, when you put it that way, it reminds me of Joni Mitchell, who, you know, there are rules of how you're supposed to tune a guitar, and she would just make up all kinds of different tunings and create chords that other people kind of weren't using. I mean, they existed, but she was playing guitar completely differently and made up her own sound.
And another point I thought that was really neat that he brought up, when he started, there was nobody that was doing it with no arms, right? And now there's two other, I think he said, competitors internationally that are doing it. And they probably started doing it because they saw him do it. And I think that's a really cool thing about sport too. And in particular, that's very unique about the Paralympics, is that until, you know, you see something impossible or what you think is impossible being done, you don't know that it can be done. When I was younger, and probably like Matt, there weren't Paralympic athletes on mainstream media or on a billboard or an ad. I mean, that really came after the London 2012 Games. And now there's so many, and it's such an inspiration for me of why I do what I do, because, you know, I want young girls to grow up and see what's possible, and for them to know that whether it's congenital or later when they acquire their disability, that they can do anything they dream of. And certainly, you know, we saw a great example of that today.
That's it from us. You can head online and see the photos we've been talking about. Just search for BBC Podium. Next time, Scout Bassett, Ed Harry, and myself, Eliza Skinner, will be joined up on the podium by another very special guest.
You remember all what you did as a sacrifice, how it was hard to be like the first African and Arab woman in fencing, because in fencing, we don't have this tradition.
The trailblazing Tunisian, Inez Boubakri on Olympic glory on Podium, next time.